And you're invited to attend our WNYC performance series of rare Tom Stoppard radio dramas in the green space. The next one is The Dog It Was That Died on Monday, April 18th. Details and tickets at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Up next, art historian Gail Levin discusses the life of Lee Krasner and places her work in the context of her marriage to Jackson Pollock. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast.
WNYC is supported by NJ Pack, presenting Legacies and Legends, Philip Glass, the composer in a discussion about his life and music, Saturday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. Information at 1-888-GO-NJ-PAC or njpack.org. Harper One, publishers of Forged, the new book by Bart D. Ehrman, author of Misquoting Jesus, Forged posits why the Bible's authors are not who we think they are and why it matters. Forged, available wherever books and e-books are sold.
New York City's own station, WNYC.
WNYC, 93.9 FM, AM 820, and WNYC.org.
The Picture House in Pelham supports WNYC and presents the Buster Keaton silent film classic, The General, on Sunday, March 27th at 8. Live music accompanies the screening, which is preceded by a reception at 7 p.m. Information, thepicturehouse.org. WNYC is giving away three pairs of tickets for the evening, starting with the second caller to reach us at 646-829-3985. But please note, if you've won anything from WNYC in the past 30 days, you're not eligible for these tickets. Lee Krasner is probably best known as the widow of the great abstract expressionist painter Jackson Pollock, but as a new biography of her makes clear, their time together accounted for only 14 years of her long life. Lee Krasner, a biography published by William Morrow, examines Krasner's life and art from her earliest years to her death, and I'm very pleased to welcome to our show its author, Gail Levin, professor of art history, American studies, and women's studies at CUNY's Graduate Center and at Brooke College. Welcome to our show.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've written biographies of Edward Hopper and Judy Chicago. Well, Lee Krasner's work is unlike either of those artists. What led you to choose her as your next subject?
I really wanted to tell Lee's story from the point of view of having known her. She was really kind of a mentor to me, and I felt that her story hadn't really been told properly.
How had you met her?
I was a graduate student, a young graduate student in my early 20s, and I called her up and asked her, could I have an interview about Jackson Pollock? And she said yes.
And she was not uncomfortable about the fact that everybody wanted to talk to her about Jackson Pollock and not about her own work?
It's really curious because I just had a course on abstract expressionism, a seminar in graduate school, and there were no women artists. This is fall of 1970. But
there were women artists in the abstract expressionist movement.
They just didn't make it into my male professor's course.
And Helen Frankenthaler didn't?
No,
Grace Hardigan?
No one. Back in those days, we were teaching with a textbook, The Survey of Art History. It had no women artists. And there was a new book on abstract expressionism. It had no women artists. So Lee didn't expect much. And when I got to the Marlborough Gallery, which was Pollock's gallery and her gallery in New York, for our interview, I got there early. And the director, Donald McKinney, sat me down and he handed me a catalog of Lee Krasner's retrospective from 1965 in London. And he said, here, you'd better read this. She's an artist, too. I don't even know if I knew that before then.
To some degree, wasn't this of her own making? Krasner seems to have been tireless in promoting Pollock and his work. She almost acted as his manager.
That's true. But she was also showing her own work. And certainly wanting it to receive attention.
But I'm assuming that because of the way she approached Pollock, people saw her mostly as his wife and as an artist's second, if they were even aware of that.
Well, that was people's choice. Certainly, the art critic Harold Rosenberg wrote about artist widows. And whenever he wrote about Krasner, he called her Pollock's widow after his death. And she hated what she called that handle.
So is that one of the misconceptions about her that you want to correct with this book?
That she was also an artist of importance? Certainly.
What did you think of Marcia Gay Harden's Oscar-winning portrayal of her in the film Pollock?
Well, I think Marcia did a great job with the screenplay she had to work with. But I think that with my biography, there should be a Krasner film now because there's a lot more to the story and it really sheds new light on who she really was.
Did you discuss the possibility of writing her biography with her before she died in 1984?
Never. I had no idea I would even write a biography of anyone. I was writing about Edward Hopper then, but had no idea that I would write a biography. And as a matter of fact, Lee detested biographies, although I like to think she would like this one.
Hmm. You write about her early life. She was the first child in a family, in her family to be born in this country. But she had older siblings?
Yes, she had four older surviving sisters and one older brother, who was, of course, the favorite child in the family.
Where did the family come from?
Oh, they came from a small town in the Russian Empire called Shpikov, which I visited last summer. It is really small, very rural, and it's a remarkable place, very unchanged because of the Soviet Union, for, you know, controlling it for so many years.
Her birth name was Lena Krasner with two S's. So when did she change it to Lee Krasner with one S?
Well, first of all, when you go to Shpikov, there's still family people with the name Krasner living there. And the double S reflects the Slavic spelling, actually.
Well, it's in Cyrillic.
Yes. So that's the pronunciation you get. She didn't change it till she was actually showing in the late 40s, but the Krasner, getting rid of the final S. But she changed from Lena to Lenore as she entered high school. She got Lenore from Edgar Allan Poe, one of her favorite writers. And then she was in Cooper Union, which was all women. And I discovered in the student newspaper already in the mid-20s, they were calling her Lee and talking about her eyelashes and such. So it was her nickname.
But it probably helps you when you're trying to establish yourself in a male-dominated art world to have a sexually ambiguous name.
This is
Lee, Terry, whatever, Bobby.
Absolutely true, but I don't believe it's the reason she chose it. I think it was chosen for her, but by the 1930 census, and she had just been at the National Academy a year or two, her first co-ed art school, she was already listing herself in the census as Lee.
How did her family feel about her desire to become an artist?
Well, her mother, as long as she didn't ask them for money, they kind of let her do what she wanted. But the whole family thought Lee was very strange. Her younger sister, Ruth, was, I think, quite envious. And Lee had incredible pizzazz and presence, the way she dressed. It was not like the rest of the family.
And her younger sister resented her because of an odd situation. When her older sister died and left a husband and two children, the family expected Lee to marry her brother-in-law and raise those three children, and she said no.
And, you know, that's one of the big misconceptions, because in previous literature, it's said that Ruth was only 14 when she was forced to marry her brother-in-law. But in fact, she was almost 19. She was just 2 years younger than Lee. And Lee, of course, had other ambitions for herself. But it's not as if she made her 14-year-old sister get married.
Well, nobody can force anybody to get married. Her sister may not have wanted to marry this guy, but
I think she did, actually.
And then she resented her sister, her older sister, for the rest of her life.
Well, what happened, the two stepdaughters adored their Aunt Lee. I was able to interview one of them for the book. And the son of her sister and the sister's new husband, her brother-in-law, her former brother-in-law, that's Ronnie Stein, the artist, and he referred to his Aunt Lee as his alter mother.
Mm.
So there was obviously some jealousy there.
Now, she studied at some of the best schools in the area, the Cooper Union, the Art Students League, the National Academy of Design, Hans Hofmann School. Did her teachers encourage her dreams of a career as a painter?
Not exactly. Her teacher at Cooper Union, Charles Hinton, very academic guy, thought she was too messy, but Victor Perard there actually paid her to do a drawing for his book on anatomy, and she thought, oh, this will be easy to earn money as an artist, because that wasn't true. And then Hans Hofmann said to her, wow, this is so good, looking at one of her works, you would never believe it was by a woman. And she said, you know, it's like getting a compliment, but then he pours on the cold water before you can enjoy it.
But there were any number of women who had made names for themselves in the 20th century, in modern art, before she came along.
You think so? In America, I can name Georgia O'Keeffe. Who else would you name?
But there were Europeans. There were Sophie Taubert Arp.
Sophie Taubert Arp was not very well known. But certainly she was, if known at all, known in Europe. And a wonderful artist. But I would say that very few women made names for themselves. Of the all women in Lee's class.
Sonia Delaunay is another one that comes to mind.
Also not very well known. I interviewed Sonia, actually, in the mid-70s. I love her work, but she's not very well known. But anyway, of all the women in Lee's class at Cooper Union, none of the other women made it. You can't even find who they are.
She worked for the WPA during the Depression, so she was able to make a living as a painter.
Yes, the WPA was so important. And by the way, you know, she was doing other people's murals, enlarging them. As sometimes they were thrown off the project, as when she was enlarging de Kooning's mural, because he got thrown off because he was not an American citizen. And she was asking Burgoyne Diller, the director, if she couldn't do a mural abstract. And, you know, it was going to be for this radio station.
WMIC. This was in our old studios in the municipal building.
But what happened is the WPA was ended because the war began, and she was reassigned to the War Services Project.
She also was an active member of the Artists Union, which was a rather political group. Was she a communist?
No, she wasn't. But that was a communist front organization, and everybody didn't know the communists were behind it. In fact, she wasn't that political, and she was very outspoken. And one Wednesday evening meeting, she was accused of being a Trotskyite. She didn't even know who Trotsky was, but she soon found out and started to read him.
Despite the fact that her family had come from Ukraine.
Yes, not everybody was so political.
Before she met Jackson Pollock, she lived with another artist, Igor Pantohov, for 10 years. I've never heard of him.
Well, he's a fascinating character. His family was very close to the Tsar. They were white Russians. His mother was a very well-trained artist at very important art schools. He was the star at the National Academy of Design. He won the equivalent of the Prix de Rome, a trip to study in Europe for a year. And Krasner's classmate, Esfahir Slobodkina, considered Igor the best-looking guy in the academy, and she couldn't believe that he was interested in Lee Krasner. She was so jealous.
Perhaps because he thought she was a good artist?
He certainly thought she was a good artist, and I know when he left for Europe, he told her to focus on her work, and when he came back, they moved in together, and they were together a whole decade.
So what happened? Why didn't he make it?
Why didn't he make it?
Why don't we remember him?
Right. And
he was so talented.
And why didn't they get married? There are two interesting things. They were both employed by the WPA. They both lost their jobs when the WPA was throwing everybody off, and they were literally starving. There were no jobs. There was no market for art. And he decided his family wanted him to go where they were in Florida with his Russian, white Russian expatriate community and paint society portraits, which he was very good at with his upper-class manners and so good-looking and so charming. And so he suddenly left, and Lee was brokenhearted. And he eventually saw the error of his ways and came back, but she was already with Pollock. And
how had she met Pollock?
Well, she first met him at an artist union dance in 1936, but she claimed never to have gotten his name, and he was drunk and stepped on her feet. And then John Graham, another Russian, white Russian immigré, Ivan Dabrowski, who changed his name, ran into her with another man who had designs on Lee, Aristodemus Caldas. And he invited Lee to be in a show of French and American paintings that he was organizing in January of 42. And one of the artists, Americans, that she claimed the only one she hadn't heard of was Jackson Pollock. She went to look him up. He lived only on 8th Street, a block from her on 9th Street.
Well, everybody seemed to know everybody in those days. De Kooning, Mondrian, Gorky, all the art critics knew each other. At a certain point later, they created this club of artists, unlike anything that happens today. Did that help? Did people encourage her?
Well, those were all her friends that you mentioned, Gorky, Mondrian, de Kooning. She met de Kooning through Igor Pantyuhov originally.
She worked on his work, although that never got completed. WNYC might own a de Kooning otherwise.
This is possible.
A de Kooning / Krasner.
But she was going to do her own. She did her own designs for WNYC, actually.
So, but really, for Pollock, the big change occurred when Peggy Guggenheim became his patron.
Yes, that made a major boost to his career. But Pollock was much shyer and less well-known than Krasner in the Art World Network before he met Krasner.
And then the reason he became more famous, are you suggesting, is because she pushed him?
Well, he was very talented. She saw that. She certainly introduced him to Gorky, to de Kooning. He already knew John Graham.
And they moved out to the Hamptons. Was that because she was trying to keep him away from all the temptations of New York, especially the alcohol women?
I think especially the alcohol, the places like the Cedar Bar. And it worked for a while.
Now, she had her first one-woman show at the Betty Parsons Gallery in 1951. Pollock was also showing there. Is it true that Parsons gave her the show because Pollock had insisted on it?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, Pollock's letter to Betty and Pollock's letter to a mutual friend that showed with Betty, Alfonso Osorio, document Pollock's support of Krasner's work.
Now, I don't want to get into the whole business of Pollock's death. Ruth Kligman actually was a guest on our show once, the woman he was having an affair with. But was that a relief for Lee in a way, because it freed her to once again just establish herself as an artist?
I think she loved Pollock deeply, and she also loved his work. It must have been just sheer hell trying to cope with him in those final years. So in that sense, it might have been a relief. She certainly didn't want to let go of Pollock.
I remember I knew Lily Deschaux, and she used to tell the story of Lee coming to her after Pollock died and saying, please buy some of these paintings. I need the money to pay for his burial and all that. I always thought Pollock was already a painter who sold for thousands, but it turns out it was more like hundreds.
Yes.
Right. And so when did all that change?
Well, after his death, Sidney Janis was selling Pollocks in his gallery, and she thought he was selling them too cheaply, and she pulled them off the market. And then she found this man, a British art dealer, David Gibbs, and she... But before that, she negotiated a sale to the Metropolitan, which at the time was considered so high that when the painting was offered to MoMA, Alfred Barr Jr. didn't even reply.
Well, eventually the Pollock sold for millions, and then her work started taking on increased value. What are her paintings sell for now?
She's almost broken at public auction, the $4 million mark, which for a woman artist is really very good. Women don't generally sell for as much as men.
Gail Evan will be speaking about the men in Lee Krasner's life this afternoon at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. That's at 2:30. For more information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. Lee Krasner, a biography, is published by William Morrow. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.